From its launch in 1967, right through the 70s to the mid-80s, BBC Radio 1 was probably the world's biggest music station. In this series, I'm introducing you to many of the people behind the network's success during those golden years, as they each tell the story of their Radio 1.
Gary Davis! Hey, Sean. Nice to be here.
Gary, it is very, very nice to see you after all this time. Now, thinking back to those days when you were listening to Radio 1 growing up, who were your heroes as you were, I guess, dreaming of one day being on the radio station?
Totally dreaming of one day being on the station. Never really believing that it would happen, but, I mean, Tony Blackburn, idol of mine. Emperor Roscoe, used to love Kenny Everett. Stuart Henry, you know, latterly more Peter Powell. I used to love listening to him. Kid Jensen. I mean, these were my heroes, these guys. And it's just so weird to end up on the same station working with them.
Yeah, you would have done with a couple, wouldn't you? Yeah.
Do you know, I think probably for the first 5 years that I was at Radio 1, I was just in awe of everybody, and it didn't go away.
Really, for that length of time?
For that length of time. It was very, very, very strange.
Hi, this is Gary Davis. 5'10½", dark brown hair, hazel eyes, new improved fading and peeling suntan, smooth, suave, sophisticated, young, free and single. Just to let you know that I'll be with you once again Saturday night between 10 and 12 for yet another classy show. And not only will I be playing you some of the classiest music on radio today, but I'll also be taking a look at some of your holiday photos before they go onto the Wall of Fame. I'll be trying to decipher your weird dreams and maybe fixing you up with the boy or girl of your dreams when I play Cupid. All this and much more on the classiest show on radio, Saturday night between 10 and 12, right here on Radio 1.
Okay, so let's talk about that time when you joined the network. There you are up in Manchester, you're working in the clubs, you're on local radio. How did you come down to London and get the big break at Radio 1?
So I'll tell you how it happened, and it's really weird and very random, as these things tend to be. I'd been at Piccadilly Radio for about, a couple of years, and I walked into this clothes shop in Altrincham, in Manchester, and I was looking on the walls, and there were photos of Radio 1 DJs in these really flash white satin jackets. And I said to the girl who was working in the shop, I said, "How come you've got these photos of Radio 1 DJs on your wall?" And she said, "Oh, my boss, John, he makes the jackets for the Radio 1 DJs." I went, "Oh, well, I work for Piccadilly Radio, and, you know, we do gigs, and I think that we'd be great in those jackets as well. Could he make some for us?" So he said, "Well, hang on, he's coming in." So he came in, and I met John. And he said, "Sure, I'll make some for the Piccadilly Radio DJ." So now the Piccadilly Radio DJs, when we went out and we were doing gigs and shows and stuff like that, we also had the Piccadilly Radio sort of white satin jackets. But John also said to me, he said, "Look, I know the guys at Radio 1. If ever you want a tape sending over to them, I'll be very happy to do that." And I've been at Piccadilly Radio like 2.5 years. And I edited down one of my shows, and I gave it to John. I said, "Would you mind giving that to whoever at Radio 1? And thought no more of it. And then I get a call from John like a month later, saying, "Johnny Beerling wants to meet you." Like, "Whoa, cool." So I come down to London, met Johnny in the sort of Radio 1 office at the time, which, of course, was Effie's, the Turkish restaurant around the corner. And sat there, we had a little chat, and it was nice. Nothing really was said about anything, just got to meet him. And went back to Manchester, carried on. And then I remember in November 1982, I got a phone call one morning from John. And he said, two questions. If a show opened up at Radio 1, when could you start? and what's, how long's your contract running left to run at Piccadilly Radio? And I said, well, actually, because I'd resisted re-signing a contract with Piccadilly Radio, because, you know, after the meeting, I thought, well, let's just hold off. I said, well, my contract hasn't been re-signed and I can start in 24 hours as I come back to you. I said, well, what's going on? He said, well, there's a potential opening at Radio 1. But he said, but it's between you and a girl. And I went, oh, you know, and there weren't many girls on the stage. I thought, I've just got no chance. So he calls me back a couple of hours later. I said, what's going on? What's going on? He said, the girl's got it. I went, no. He said, but so have you.
Both
of you. So, and that was basically the time that they were increasing the hours at the weekend. They employed three new jocks, Pat Sharp, who'd already been doing some debt work there, and Janice Long and myself. And they were extending the hours Saturday night. And so Janice was doing 8 till 10, and I did 10 till 12.
You did, Saturday the 4th of December, 1982.
And I remember it well.
Do you?
Oh. Very, very well.
Nervous as anything, I would imagine.
Petrified.
Time now is 16 minutes to 12, and it's still me, Gary Davis, with you through till midnight. 5 foot 10 and a half, faded suntan, smooth, suave, sophisticated, and the moment that you have been waiting for, an inside leg measurement of... Oh, Kitty, you've come in. Oh, come in for the night. Yeah, I'll get you.
It was a real gamble. You know, I had a very sort of relatively secure career at Piccadilly. I could have stayed there, you know, for quite a while. I had a good situation in Manchester. I was very well known. I was playing all the clubs. I was earning really good money. And basically, you know, Radio 1 offered me a three-month contract on something like £40 a week. That was it.
And even in 1982, wasn't there a vast amount of money?
It wasn't a vast amount of money. And it was just one of those things where I think, you know, sometimes in life you've got to take a chance. It'd be my dream to work for Radio 1. Even if it lasted only 3 months, I did it. Anyway, ended up 11 years.
What's very interesting listening back to those early shows, particularly the first one, is that you're mentioning the suntan, your height, inside leg measurements, all that sort of thing. It was clear right from the start that an image was being created. Was that because you were being pushed that way by the management, or was that something that you went in with, you know, your own idea, I can offer this?
It actually came about because Doreen Davis, who was one of the executive producers at Radio 1, and, you know, I was Johnny Beerling's boy. Johnny brought me in. But Doreen was very lovely, and I'd been there a few months, and Doreen called me in and said, lovely to see you, Gary, listening to you on the radio, enjoying your shows. She said, but I feel there's something missing. And I said, what do you mean? She said, well, you know, people need to know who you are and relate to you. She said, you know, you look at Mike Reed, he's there, he plays his guitar in the morning and he sings songs, and, you know, people relate to him that way. You look at Steve Wright, he's completely mad, he's got all his characters, and people relate to him that way. She said, well, what who are you? What's special about you? I said, me, I'm just a single boy. I said, I just moved to London. I don't have anywhere to live. I'm living in a cupboard in my sister's flat. The room was so tiny. And she said, play on it. and so that's where it happened. So it wasn't really that sort of premeditated. It was something that Doreen said, you know, you should connect with your audience more. And then gradually these phrases sort of just happened and came about, you know. So, you know, I'd go on air and say, if you don't know, I'm 5 foot 10 and a half, I've got a fading suntan, da da da. And then, you know, few months or whatever later, Sunfire released a song, Young, Free and Single. So I went, I added that onto the tagline.
The t-shirts
and,
as well, yeah.
And did the t-shirts. And so these things sort of just generically happened.
Gary Davis!
Young, free and single, I just want to mingle with you, lady.
You know, the Woo Gary Davis jingle came about from a Cane Gang song called Small Town Creed. They were desperate to get, as a lot of artists were, to get their songs played on the radio. So they used to make jingles for the DJs. And they made this one, woo, Gary Davis. And I heard that, and I just thought, do you know what? This could be really catchy. So started playing it.
Woo, Gary Davis.
Presents quite simply the classiest show on radio.
I was grateful to be on the station. It's like your dream station. It's the number one. You couldn't get at that time a bigger radio station.
It's certainly been a brilliant year for Paul Young this year. That's his latest hit, Love of the Common People. 19 minutes to 11 on Radio 1 on 275 and 285 and also Stereo VHF. Non-stop music through till 2 o'clock tomorrow morning.
And the fact that they asked me to take over Friday afternoons from Steve Wright was just amazing.
Hi, good afternoon and welcome to the show, coming to you live from the Ideal Home Exhibition at Earls Court in London. Hope you're enjoying your Easter Monday and that you'll stay with me, Gary Davis, till 4:30 on Radio 1 on 275 and 285 and also Stereo VHF. And today is the very last day of the exhibition, so we're going to have a lot of fun during the next 2 hours. To get us underway this afternoon, Status Quo.
I was just really happy doing what I was doing. Not really stressing about, well, will it lead any further or what have you. It was just great that they seemed to like me and I was just doing the best job in the world.
But then you get Top of the Pops.
I know.
It's the best of 1982. This next group had no less than 4 big hits. They've currently got a song in the charts at the moment called Changes. Is it just an illusion? No, it really is imagination.
And again, this would have been something that you would have been watching as a boy, dreaming of being part of.
Yeah. I used to watch Top of the Pops every week and I would fall in love with all the dancers there and all the girls in the audience. Oh, the most beautiful girls. Oh, I'd just love to be in the audience one day and let alone end up presenting it. Mind you, my first few appearances were horrific.
Really?
Absolutely horrific. I mean, talk about nerves. I was just like a rabbit in the headlights.
Not just one of the best bands of 1982, but certainly the busiest. They've already got 2 gold albums, and they've played a massive 250 dates across the country. But they've still got the energy to be with us tonight. It's Shack Attack and Nightbirds.
And then the feedback came back afterwards from my manager. Said Michael Hill said, look, he really didn't like you on Top of the Pops, and he's not going to use you anymore. I was just like, I can understand because I was pretty horrible. But actually, he didn't use me, I think, 2 or 3 months. And then the next thing I know, he gave me another crack. And you were ready for it. I was back on it. And I think somebody said that in the 80s, I probably presented the show more than any other DJ.
Today, Radio 1 presents Young, Free and Single, Gary Davis with Janice Long from Expo 84 at Cranfield Airport.
Stick around.
You're doing Top of the Pops, and then when we're talking about perhaps the things you most want to do, if you can hang on beyond 1 or 2 3 month contracts, the Radio 1 Roadshow, and you seemed an absolute completely natural fit for that. You were very, very at home in that situation.
Yeah, I guess that's my nightclub training. Because I used to DJ in this club in Manchester called Placemate. And Placemate was quite unique at the time because it had like 5 different nightclubs within one. So it had 5 rooms playing different types of music. And basically, if you ended up playing a bad record, everybody would clear the dance floor and they would move into another room. So it actually taught me how to become a good DJ, a good live DJ. And I tell you, someone who else who totally inspired me live was the late Peter Stringfellow. Peter Stringfellow had a club in Leeds called Cinderella Rockefeller, and then he opened a club called Millionaire in Manchester. And Peter was probably one of the best club DJs that I've ever seen. His rapport with the audience, his chat with the audience, because obviously at that time, you know, DJs were talking and playing records. And I learned so much from him in the way to relate to an audience and to handle an audience. And so when it came round to the Radio 1 road shows, a lot of my colleagues, I think probably most of my colleagues, when they did the road shows, would sit behind the road show desk and play records and treat it like they are in the studio, except people watching, and then they have a few guests performing in front of them. And I just thought, this is a live entertainment show. People need to be entertained. So I never operated on a road show.
Never, ever.
Ever. I had my engineer or my producer operating, and I was there at the front of the stage talking to the crowd, entertaining the crowd. And a lot of that I learned from my nightclub days. Mm. So I felt very, very comfortable on the road show.
Let's talk about when you first got your own daily programme, because that was in the spring of 1984. You were replacing Mike Smith, who'd whizzed off and obviously had a pretty major TV career going on at that time. All of a sudden, you're in the lunchtime slot. You're calling it The Bit in the Middle.
Which it was.
Yeah, which it seems so easy and you know, such an obvious thing to do now.
Yeah, I just felt that it was something that needed an identity. And, yeah, it really caught on. It was a fantastic show.
A couple of gifts in there. The day-to-day challenge had been there before you took over. However, I think it's only fair to say that you made that feature your own, didn't you?
Well, I think you had to. You have to adapt it and do it your way. And it was, to be honest with you, I mean, I wasn't a massive fan of the day-to-day challenge.
Really?
I became a fan of it. I became
a fan.
Oh,
so initially...
Yeah. I just thought, I'd rather do something new. But the reaction to it had been really, really good. The Day-to-Day Challenge
with Gary Davis. Day two. We welcome back Jonathan Hogg from Audley Edge in Cheshire. Hi, Jonathan.
Hi, Gazza.
How you doing? All right?
Great, yeah. Hang on, got the Motley Crue here.
Oh, dear. Are they drunk or what?
Another institution when you were doing the lunchtime show was the honour, and it really was in those days, of counting down the brand new top 40, because we're still talking about the days when it was announced on a Tuesday lunchtime. You would have been growing up listening to the likes of Johnny Walker and Paul Burnett doing it. All of a sudden, you're doing it.
Radio 1, this week's top 40.
Good afternoon. Welcome to the Little Bit in the Middle. It's Gary with you through till 2. It's Tuesday. It's chart day. The brand new top 40 for you. On the chart this week, 5 new entries, 15 records going up, 18 going down. And there are 2 non-movers. Between now and 1 o'clock, taking a look at the top 5. And up 3 places to number 5 this week. Ollie and Jerry, Breaking, There's No Stopping.
I mean, you're talking about the entire country stopping. I used to do it myself, just ahead of 1 o'clock, the chart rundown, the number 1. But also, the entire music industry would be tuned in as well.
Nick Kershaw, Don Quixote is a new entry this week at number 23. And here's a new entry at number 22, UB40, with Chrissie Hynde. I Got You, Babe.
But it was an honour, and it was a real event. I mean, the charts ruled the music industry. If you were a new entry, if you were a big climber, if you were the new number one, it was a proper big deal. And, yeah, I mean, from my days in school, you stopped Tuesday lunchtime. You were in your break. You were there with your radio and you were listening to the brand new chart.
Scribbling the charts down. Yeah.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. It was a great occasion.
The interesting thing is that
I gave Prince a hit out of it.
You did. Now I was going to talk to you about that. You're ahead of me. 1999 was your chart rundown music, wasn't
Correct.
It?
Correct. It became that. Yes.
Yeah.
A new entry.
entry in number 40 for Blancmange and What's Your Problem? Down 9 of 39, Cool and the Gang and Cherish. A new entry of 38, Billy Idol and Rebel Yell.
Basically, the intro of 1999 was really long. Right?
Yeah.
And so we looped it. I got them to loop it. And I said, you know what? I think this could really work. And we sort of timed it to work with a countdown from 40 down to 1 or to 2. And yeah, as long as I did it in time, it worked. and you know, did that for a number of months, and they ended up re-releasing the song.
And number 2, it's Frankie Goes to Hollywood. But which one? You'll find out in a mo.
Radio 101, the new top 40.
Now, that first year that you did the chart in 1984, there were quite a few things going on because we had the whole Frankie Goes to Hollywood thing.
Yeah.
So Relax was going down the chart, and all of a sudden it started coming back up again. Two Tribes.
Yeah. So I was furious that it got banned. It was a record of the week of mine. I mean, I love that song.
At 1 to 4, Prince and When Doves Cry. A non-mover at number 3, Frankie Goes to Hollywood, Relax.
And the interesting thing is, by the end of the year, you've got the fastest selling single of all time, raising money for a very worthwhile cause. At the very least, we can say that. The whole Band-Aid thing, and all of a sudden, you were on the 6 o'clock news with the cameras in the studio with you and unveiling to the nation that was number one. So it was a really exciting first few months on that program doing the chart.
Britain's number one.
The fastest selling single ever. Britain's brand new number one, Band-Aid. Do they know it's Christmas time?
At one point, when I was doing the lunchtime show, we didn't actually have a playlist. What we had was the chart, which basically you were designated which songs from the chart you could play in your show so that there weren't too many clashes. But apart from that, there was no other playlist. So you chose your own new songs, you chose your own oldies, and it was just brilliant. And, you know, a big part of my day would be coming into Radio 1 in the morning before my show and listening to all the new songs that have been delivered that day. And if I like something, I would go on air and play it. I champion quite a few artists, and I really champion U2. They were quite a sort of late night sort of specialist band at that time, but you know, I was delighted to start really playing them on the mainstream. I also had a real ear out for the unusual, but then a big supporter of artists and bands as well.
Righty-ho, Steve, between 3 and 5.30 this afternoon, singled out at 5.45 with Janice Long. Joining Janice this week, Pete Shelley and DC Lee. They're going to be giving their opinions on the latest releases. 7 till 10 tonight is Andy Peebles with Music and Sport. This week's featured band is the Redbeards from Texas. And also at 7.45 this evening, it'll be Today's Birthday Honours Award winner. 10 till midnight, it's Ian Gillan sitting in for Tommy Vance, and he's going to be featuring a session from Cannes. Friday Rock Show between 10 and 12. So that's the rest of today here on Radio 1.
And it was a fantastic time slot, because I didn't have to get up too early in the morning, so I could still have fun at night. And, we just made it into this really good little show, you know. And the other good thing was I used to love doing outside broadcasts, whether it was the road show or whether it was like we did a thing called Gary Goes to Your Place. So we used to literally just take the show on the road, and we would pick a town and we would say, if you're in this town, let us know where you're going to be, and if we've got time, we'll try and pop in. And everything was live, and it was all flying by the seat of your pants, and nothing was really planned at all. And it was just great fun.
For the very last time this week, ladies and gentlemen, put your hands together and welcome on stage the world's greatest Blanca player. I'm talking, of course, of Willie on the Blanca. Well, Willie has had some receptions this week, but no reception quite like the reception he's getting at the moment in Bournemouth.
One of my producers during the time I was there was a guy called Paul Williams, and his nickname was Willie. And he is a brilliant, brilliant pianist. And we used to have a piano just outside the studio. So, you know, one day he was playing, and I said, hey, you know, when we do the weather or something, you play the music, you know. So Willie on the Plunker was born. And
And we used to get him, the listeners, you know, to ask for their favourite piece of music, and he would play it and while we were reading the weather. And then that sort of eventually went into sort of like playing some great classical music over the weather, and so that became the classical bit in the middle, and just things just sort of happened.
Sing along to Willie on the Plonker presents Never Gonna Give You Up.
Again, completely putting you on the spot. If there was one standout Radio 1 memory,
there were so many. I guess if I had to sort of say what was the one standout moment for me, and it was actually the year that I left Radio 1, and it was the 21st anniversary of the Radio 1 Roadshow, and they asked me to do it. And I was the only DJ to do it, and it was at Mark Eaton Park in Derby.
This should be played at high volume.
And it turned out that all the motorways were gridlocked. People were desperate to get to the roadshow, and they couldn't get to that roadshow. And we had about 75,000 people inside Mark Eaton Park. And had there not been roadblocks, it would have been even bigger. So, yeah, I think that's probably an amazing memory. One of... hundreds, thousands.
And now, after all these years, back at the BBC, playing all those songs that you made hits first time around on BBC Radio 2. Did you ever see that coming?
Not in a million years. Not in a million years. And had no intention of ever being back on the radio again. It just wasn't in my plans. I was running my company, still am running my company. And it was just the most incredible series of coincidences, which started with a call from Simon Mayo's producer saying, "Gary, it's Comic Relief. Loads of people coming in. Simon said he's not seen you in ages. No one's heard from you in ages. What are you up to? How about coming in for a little chat?" And you know, normally I'd had loads of requests to do this sort of stuff over the years, and I just turned it down. I just thought, that was then. I'm quite happy doing what I'm doing now, and I'm also one of those people who I love living in the future. You know, there's a few people I know who always say, "Oh, it's just not how it used to be, and wasn't like this," and they're never happy, you know. And I never want to be like that because I love the future and I love the present, as much as I also adored the past as well, because it was, you know, some of the best times I've ever had in my life. But for some reason or what, I just thought, you know what, I haven't been to the BBC for 20-odd years. Why not go and say hello to Simon? So I came in, and we had like a three-minute chat on air, and took a little picture and posted it on Facebook. And apparently the reaction to the photo on Facebook was like amazing. Clearly, the guys at Radio 2... thought, well, let's try him again. And then I ended up doing Steve Wright's show for a week.
Yeah.
And I think because I've had this massive break away, going back to it really made me realise just how much I'd miss broadcasting. It's great. It's the best feeling in the world when you're broadcasting. And I hadn't done it for so long, and it's just so nice to be back doing it again.
Well, it is very nice that you are back, and it is very nice to see you after all this time. Gary Davis, thank you for sharing your Radio 1.
Thank you for having me.